has to pay the iron price.
He has to pay the iron price.
He'll never respect you while he lives it.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey's thirsty, killing pain to hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood in the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar to Harris, all men must serve. See as the raven flies, and time slips by. Valar my bullets, all men must die.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast brought to you by baldmove.com. We are the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones television series.
I got excited when you started off with officially and then paused. I was like, did we? No. Oh.
Yeah, the big HBO buck's going to be rolling in, buddy.
Nope, unfortunately not.
We have more chance of the big HBO lawsuits rolling in. Tonight we're talking about the episode we just moments ago finished watching. It's episode 6. Yes, it is episode 6, isn't it?
7, I
episode
think.
Episode 7?
Yeah, yeah.
Mockingbird.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Mockingbirds fly, right? Do they make other people fly?
Apparently they
do. Are they like Peter Pan?
Apparently they do make people fly. They make bad people fly.
Yeah. I really like this episode. I thought there was a lot of good stuff with Arya and the Hound. I thought there was a lot of great stuff. Some of it is super exasperating, though. Like, Jon Snow just consistently being dicked over
by Sir Alistair Thorne.
Every time. This guy is going to get everyone in the Seven Kingdoms killed.
And every time he takes a half step towards him to like, I'm going to fucking kill this guy. And then someone's like, hold him back.
Yeah.
Hold him back.
So I don't know. Some of that stuff is good, but I grow weary of it. A lot of good stuff here. Jaime's stuff with Tyrion. Everything with Tyrion.
I think this episode could be accused of being a connective tissue episode, that there's more stuff being laid for the next few episodes. But even in an episode where largely its pieces being rearranged on the chessboard, you got the death of a major character. You got Oberyn's swearing of championship of Tyrion gave me a raging book Game of Thrones.
If it
doesn't go down in the next 3 hours or so, you might have to take me to the hospital because it'll be a problem. You were going to say something?
I was just going to say, a couple of times during the Breaking Bad podcast, we talked about how they would consistently surprise us with things that are obvious in retrospect. I feel like a lot of that happened in this episode. I feel like the stuff that Jaime and Tyrion were talking about where they pointed out that, look, if Jaime were to step in and be Tyrion's champion, it would kill – it would put Tywin in a no-win scenario.
In one stroke, yeah.
And I didn't see that as a possibility. That made just a ton of sense. And then when Oberyn steps in, that only makes sense, I guess, once the Mountain is proclaimed as Cersei's champion. But it kind of also makes sense in that he hates Tywin. So maybe you could say that that's a little bit of that too. But yeah, I just felt like that was really satisfying as well.
Yeah, I was worried. It's funny because – I've always worried with you and Mad Brew that you will speculate too close to the truth.
Yeah.
And then people will be like, oh, Aaron's feeding them in for her. This is just a charade.
Or, oh, God.
This is like reality television. It's scripted. and it's funny because it eventually is going to happen. In fact, it might have happened with Mad Brew. But it was just funny when you were throwing out names of champions. And I followed a couple other Unsullied podcast for people that haven't read a book speculated, and I think I only heard out of like 6 possible permutations, maybe one hit upon Oberyn as being the champion. But
it's a hard one to hit on until you know about Gregor.
Gregor. Yeah, and I guess I, as a person who's read the books and seen the episode titles, that I was afraid it was just going to be way too obvious and just too out there on the internet.
It might have been. I can't read anything on the internet about Game of Thrones.
That's very wise of you.
Yeah, I stay as far away as possible from everything Game of Thrones on the internet.
But yeah, let's talk about some of the stuff. First, I think there's not a whole lot to talk about up north at the wall.
Just Alistair being an asshole again.
John wants to give the wall a shit ton of fiber and just block it up.
Yep.
Stop up that hole. Alistair says it's an act of cowardice, and he bullies the, I don't know what you would call this, the wall smell council.
That guy was like the first builder or something, is what he called him.
Right, but I don't know what you'd call that collection of, like, I'm sure you've got the first steward, the first ranger, the first builder, And yeah, I'm not sure what you call that collectively, but obviously Sir Alistair's using his acting Lord Commander stuff to the hilt.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think he's going to get everybody killed. I mean, winter's coming, and this bastard is doing nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean Jon Snow. I mean Alistair.
So what do you think? What do you think is going to happen? 100,000 wildings come up against the wall, and in Jim Jones universe, what happens?
They just overrun it, like Jon is warning against. Like they come through this. So I don't know exactly what the tunnel is. I assume it's a tunnel running underneath the wall,
yeah,
through the wall,
something like
that. We've
seen them go
through
it several times.
Okay, and it's their only way, apparently, to get north.
Right.
Because unless they wanted to go down the wall, which would be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, okay, you might be able to defend the tunnel a little bit, but 100,000 men coming through that tunnel are going to overpower you no matter what you put up there.
Right, especially when we've seen what giants are capable of doing.
Sure.
You know, pounding in tree trunks into the ground with their damn fists.
Yeah, I hope they pound Alistair into the ground with their fists. That's what I want.
So that's pretty much it for up north.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make. Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time. Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret, Hush Hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers. Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited. It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Let's talk about what's stuff going on in King's Landing. I really enjoyed all the visits that Tyrion got to his cell.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about his brother, and did it... I don't know. I mean, if that was the only option, I was kind of surprised Jaime not suggesting that you go ahead and be in his champion, knowing that that would put his father in such a difficult position.
He said it was tempting.
Yeah, but it's not like it. The thing is this is Tyrion's right to trial by combat.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something Tywin can rescind.
Sure.
You know, it's not something that he can say, you can't do that, not without it being even a bigger farce than it is. So
it would be a big fuck you, but
it would probably
he would have to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Tywin could order the mountain to die. And that's the other thing is, like, I'm not sure if trial by combat is. It implies in this episode is trial to the death. I thought it was more, you know, that yes, it can go to the death, but it's basically to the defeat.
It is. It's
and every trial by combat we've seen in this universe has ended in somebody dying.
Yeah, I lived dangerously for one day on the Game of Thrones internet, and I looked up trial by combat.
Oh, really?
And the actual rules, and you can submit during trial by combat. You can just say, okay, you win, I'm done.
Right.
But apparently people don't do that.
So in the situations we've seen, that has not been a possibility because of the person's pride or the desperate situation or whatever.
Sure.
Actually, we'll probably talk a little bit more about Trial by Combat this full episode.
Okay.
Because I had several people question. You know, a common question is, if the right to Trial by Combat exists in this universe, what stops a guy like from the Mountain or Jamie before he lost his hand or another badass like Prince Oberon just basically committing crime after crime and like Trial by Combat, Trial by Combat, Trial by Combat?
Nothing, I'd say.
Unless, you know, you run up against one of those three as your champion, you're probably just going to be able to breeze through the legal system.
Probably, yeah. So, I mean, the legal system is not very fair back then anyway.
Right, right.
So that doesn't seem like a loophole I'd be too worried about.
We'll talk a little bit more about that on the cast. Okay. I really like Bronn, and I thought this was played perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
He really, really wants to help Tyrion. He really, really likes Tyrion. But there's nothing in this for him. There's no percentage where this comes up for him to be smart, because no one can offer him more.
Yeah.
I mean, Tyrion's got that one, like, okay, long con, if I get out of this, and if I can get back Sansa, and if I get back to the North, I can give you a huge piece of fucking tundra up there.
A bird in the hand, yeah. Tyrion.
Yeah, a Lawless in the hand.
Yeah, it's castle in the hand.
Yes.
Wasn't that a Jimi Hendrix song, I think?
Something about a watchtower, anyway. I thought that was played perfectly. I thought the final visit he got by Prince Oberon was just amazing. It's straight from the book. The story about him going with his sister to see the monster Tyrion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that it all comes together, his desire for vengeance, the mountain being there, the ability to humiliate Tywin. It really got me excited. And also Tyrion's reaction to like this salvation coming out of nowhere. Because I think he was set to die.
He was, yeah.
Until Prince Oberyn came in there and said, picked up his torch, literally.
Yeah. I really like how that scene played out, just because I don't know if I would have necessarily bought it without Oberyn running through the story of Cersei and seeing Tyrion as a child, as a baby.
Right.
I don't know that I would have bought the idea that Oberyn would just step in there and risk his life just to kind of annoy Tywin.
Right.
But it really felt like Oberyn had kind of a stake in this himself.
Sure.
I mean, and he was doing this, yes, also for Tyrion.
Yeah.
So there was both sides of that, and it just felt really satisfying.
I like how the show is positioning the Martells of Dorne as being like the Starks, only more fun.
Okay.
They've got the streak of justice. They seem like they got their shit together. They're not as greedy or cruel or evil as everybody else. But they also like to have mad sex and drink mad wine.
Uh-huh.
And they're not above chopping off an underling's hand just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
I also like the he's like, oh yeah, I was just got back from a brothel. It was a stunning blonde. You should have seen her. It was your sister.
Yeah.
Really good line. Sure. Let's talk about Arya and the Hound. We've got the Good Hound back again.
Yeah, Good Hound's back again. Now Arya doesn't hate him anymore. Like, where am I supposed to fall on this guy?
This him telling the story about how his family treated him from a very young age. I mean, I got the mind that Sandor was like 5-6 years old tops during the story.
Could be.
How does that change your view of him as a character? I mean, if like he said, you know, your brother got me got you that. My brother got me this. I've been alone. You think you're alone now? I've been alone my entire life.
Sure. I think the only new piece of information I got there was what his father did. And that was, you know, to just basically protect his brother and make up an excuse about it. When he should have been severely punished at the very least.
Right.
Because
it's not
that,
like
that was heartbreaking.
It's not like, let's say that Tarly fucker, he's got Sam.
Tarly, not the bread maker.
No. I'm talking about the fat, the guy who's the fat steward up at the wall, John's friend, Sam.
Okay, yeah, I know Sam.
The Slayer. The Walker Slayer.
Oh, his last name's Tarly.
His last name's Tarly, and he's the son of a very famous warlord.
Mm-hmm.
and he was sent to the wall basically because he's a fucking disappointment.
Yeah. Grow some balls.
It's not like Sandor was that. I mean, Sandor is a badass, could have been a really awesome knight on his own right.
Sure.
And his father sacrificed his safety, well-being, and psychology to protect Gregor, who already at that young, tender age was a psychopath.
Sure.
I don't know. I just feel like it's – I don't want to give characters like this a pass.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. But they certainly have a little more slack about – what kind of shit they get up to than a Jamie Lannister, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Really has.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Your dad's disapproved of you. And you've been fucking your sister since you're, you know, since you grew hair on your nuts, okay?
Yeah, that's, I thought it was effective.
Not exactly as a tragic origin story.
No.
As a Tyrion or the Hound.
No, not really. Not at all.
It's still hard to contextualize him riding down and killing a butcher's boy. Again, it was in his official capacity as protector for Joffrey and all that. But still,
yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of discretion you can have in that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But you can see a guy that just has that much rage and that much abandonment issues. I don't know. Am I making too much excuses for him here, Jim?
I don't think so.
I can tell you're not swayed. You still don't know why the show's jerking you around with this guy.
Well, okay, that's really it. I don't know why the show is doing this to me. I understand he's not supposed to be just a bad character or just a good character.
Mm-hmm.
But the show doesn't seem to want to just hit a tone with him. It wants to just keep oscillating back and forth between really bad and really sympathetic.
Right.
And I don't know. It feels like they could take like a slightly more deft approach to that.
Yeah, I mean, we've complained about that. Rightfully so, when it happens in The Walking Dead.
Sure.
Where a character is, you know, don't want to be the leader, I'm the leader. Don't want to make decisions for a group, I want to make decisions for a group and from week to week. And I don't know why it's not as offensive to me when it's being done in the Game of Thrones, with the exception of Jaime, which I, you know, is water under the bridge at this point. The Hound stuff doesn't bother me as much because I guess I chalk it up to his different level of sobriety. You know, which side of the bed he woke up on this morning, the fact that he's not, you know, he still hasn't, he's still clearly, even at his best, not a great person.
Sure.
And his redemption is still, if at all, going to be in the future. So I don't, and also I guess it's just better. I mean, he's just a very interesting character, and I don't
he
know.
He is, yeah, and I don't know, to say that I'm really annoyed by it, I guess, might be a little too harsh.
Right.
It's just something that I see them consciously doing, and maybe I just like to be a little more surprised. Not surprised, but just notice it a little less when they do stuff like that.
It does seem like Arya's learning a lot from him. You know, she's had these teachers.
She knows where the heart is now.
She knows where the heart is.
Sure.
We had Syrio, then Jaqen, and now Sandor the Hound, and it seems like she's learned a little bit from each one of them. I don't know, do you think in a weird way she might be learning something about mercy from the Hound as well, not just in how he treated the, I don't know what you call that, farmer or miller or whatever the hell small person he was,
yeah,
but also just the fact that she, you know, he's a name on her list.
Mm-hmm.
That she's clearly warming up to. I mean, she could have killed him right then and there. We've said this a couple times. There's several instances where she could have killed him and has chosen not to.
Yeah. So do you think she's not because she feels bad for him? Is that what you're asking me?
I don't think feeling bad is the right word, but there's a difference between a guy like him and a guy like Joffrey.
Okay.
She's got a clear difference. She's got them all on her list, and I'm just wondering if they're trying to show us that. The last thing I guess you'd think that she'd learn at the hands of Sandor was this concept of mercy, but I was watching him, you know, stab that guy through the heart, and it was like a very tender thing. It was very absent of the Hound's usual snark or sarcasm or anything.
Sure. He didn't take any silver off of him. I don't know if he had any silver on
then
him.
Then again, but he instantly was accosted by some dude trying to rip his throat out with his teeth. So maybe he had a smart-ass one-liner at the ready.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's interesting also in parallel with Daenerys this episode, because Arya seems to be taking to heart some lessons that Daenerys is not.
Mm.
I'm kind of cooling off on Daenerys quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah. Her quest to free the slaves was cool. She started killing all the masters, regardless of, you know, any consequences and whether or not they actually were good or evil or just, you know, a product of what they do in that continent. She does not learn a lesson. I mean, Jor-El tried to teach her the lesson, tried to explain the lesson he was trying to teach her this episode, and she just completely ignores him.
She doesn't. She actually...
She sends Hidalgo as her ambassador.
Right.
And gives him a choice to surrender or die, essentially, right?
To tell the masters of Qarth, or not Qarth, Astapor, that they have the chance to either surrender or be executed.
Okay.
To repent of their old ways and go along with her new regime of no slavery and all that, or be destroyed, which is better than what she originally is going to send.
I guess, yeah.
I'm thinking Hidalgo.
Hizdar, Zalorak. I know his actual name.
Dario. Yeah, Dario Nyquilus. She's going to send him out to lay down the law, kill them all.
That's true.
So she was tempered, but I think you're right to suspect her motives there.
I certainly can't see, and I'm sure she doesn't see a way that these people actually surrender and turn over a new leaf all of a sudden.
Yeah, but
so she's probably expecting them to die.
Right, so it's more of kind of like, I'll just do this so, you know, to gain your approval or to shut you up.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't really necessarily believe it or think it's going to alter what's actually going to happen.
Seems like it.
And you're right, because just last episode, she had the scene with Hidalgo, Hizdar, whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah.
Hizdar Ralu. He had that moment where she clearly felt bad about what she did, but she was about to repeat the same thing in a different city.
She was, yeah.
Although, like I said last podcast, maybe she decided to do option C, which was kill all the masters. You just completely don't have to worry about any political ramifications. You just kill them all. It's like her mistake was I let the majority of them live. Maybe that's the lesson.
Yeah, but
then
you get the butcher coming in and taking over things, and
yeah.
you get factions rising up regardless of how many people you kill.
Yeah, it's like these
people.
You
just got to get the right factions in place.
These people are slaves, and it's noble to let, you know, it's like if you want to just completely overthrow the masters and let them set up their own government. Mm-hmm. But unless you're willing to provide them protection while they're figuring this out.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you're basically leaving them vulnerable to whatever hounds or jackals are going to come in there to take advantage of them and re-enslave them.
Sure.
And it seems like maybe she's trying to do that with the Second Sons. We'll have to see how successful it is.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
What did you think about her taking Dario to bed?
Has that happened before, or is that the first time?
Well, she got out and paraded her naked body in front of him. I believe this is the first time they've actually, as the romantics say, did it. as the romantics say, they boned.
I don't know. It's hard for me to see Prince Oberyn and Dario in the same episode and think, how much more effective would Oberyn be on Dany than Dario? Because he's so much cooler. He's so much more suave. He's just a better all-around character, and she's stuck with Oberyn number two, Dario.
Yeah, there's something Freddie Prinze Jr. about this guy that he's trying to play this bad boy that's like annoying her but also making her hot.
Yeah, yeah.
That trope. And there's something about their chemistry that he just can't pull it off.
We talked about this in relation to Dario number one.
And he's had some better moments, but this guy just seems entirely too genteel.
Yeah, yeah.
And a little bit too, I want to say, pussy whipped to kind of pull that off. Like, I don't buy this guy as a person who wakes up with the idea of fucking and killing as his reason for existence.
Sure, yeah.
This guy seems like he might be writing some romantic poetry.
Uh-huh.
This guy seems like he might be writing, Dario Tigerian in his school notebook and drawing hearts around it. It's not the kind of guy that would make Khaleesi forget herself and completely. The other thing about this is it really fucks up her kind of I don't know what you call this her ruling council, her small council. Like Tywin would not, if there is a or any successful ruler wouldn't take someone that's on your small council to bed.
Yeah, that's probably not a good idea.
Especially when another of your small council members is going to be mad jealous of him.
Yep.
It's almost like, yeah, I fucked Dario. You guys should totally be jealous of each other.
Yeah, it's a terrible idea.
And now I'm going to send you down there to rub it in his face that you talked to me and changed my mind and are going to give him overriding orders. It's just like she's setting this up as a house of hormonal cards.
I think she's just a very naive, immature leader. I mean, she's been thrown into this position.
I kind of think that's actually exactly, you hit the nail on the head.
That's what they're getting at?
That's not just a subtext. I think that is the text. That's what's in the books.
All right.
Figuring this shit out as she goes and making a lot of mistakes that a young woman thrust in this position would do.
Okay. I can buy that, and I kind of like that storyline for her.
But it is sometimes kind of jaw dropping and like, oh my fucking God, head shaking, the stuff that she gets up to.
Sure.
Final plot line at the Eyrie, or at least I believe it's the final plot line. Sansa and Peter and Lysa love triangle handled decisively. There is no more triangle.
No, there's not.
And there's also no ambiguity about the creepiness of Baelish. He's got the hots for Sansa. That was not a fatherly kiss.
No,
that was
God,
not an
no.
Uncle-ly kiss.
Uncle Peter is coming to town. Get your lips ready.
It might
ready.
Be that kind of uncle.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No. It's... He's got his eyes on her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Even more beautiful than Catelyn.
Yeah.
According to Baelish.
Than on our best day.
Yeah.
Even after she's been laying off the lemon cakes for a couple weeks. did you? So again, another scene is fairly pretty much right out of the book. Her building the snow castle, the shit that went down with her and Robin, and then Lady Lysa getting chucked out the moon door. What'd you think? We talked about this a little bit.
It was awesome. Every single person in that scene had every single thing coming to them.
Yes.
Robin had the slap coming to him for a long time. Lysa needed to fly. I'm so glad it went down like that.
When did you know it was going to happen?
So some of the things were telegraphed pretty early. Like when when Peter showed up in the garden or whatever that was, the courtyard, I knew immediately that he was going to kiss Sansa and that the what's-her-face was going to see him. Mm. And because, you know, Robin ran off to go get his mom, presumably.
Right.
I knew she was on her way. It was a bad scene there, and I knew that was coming. And then...
Do you think Peter did all that on purpose? This is yet another thing he's architected.
No. If he wanted to throw her out the moon door, he could just do it anytime he wanted.
No, I'm saying maybe he didn't intend to do it that moment. I'm saying him knowing that Robin's going to run off and get his mom, that she was going to be seeing, you know, walking in on this interlude.
Man. I don't feel like it is, but...
I don't think it matters. I just thought it was an interesting question to ask. But anyway, okay. What were you going to say?
And then I knew immediately when he stepped into the chamber that Liza was going to fly. It was too obvious.
Did you think that... was there even a doubt in your mind that Sansa would get chucked out there?
There was a slight doubt until Peter walked in.
Okay. Because I always wonder if you're not a book reader, like, and no character is safe, like...
That's the thing.
Like, if they throw
that was actively going through my mind.
If they had a Chuck Sansa out the door, I'd been like, "Whoa, okay."
Well, especially having read the books, you would have been like, "Whoa."
That's what I'm saying.
They're going in a different direction.
They've done that before. I mean, that would be by far the biggest departure. Yeah. But you know, it would definitely blow my mind. But I'm you know, most of the time I'm sitting there watching this just as a purely. I'm liking to see the book happen on the and very skillfully happen on the screen. Mm-hmm. And then you get times like when you went north of the wall and saw the White Walkers turn a baby into a walker, and I'm like, mind blown. But very rarely does that actually happen. So I'm kind of interested in how those moments hit you, the non-book reader.
Sure. I mean, I think I saw them as soon as I could have seen them. No, no. As soon as the characters entered the room, it was like, I kind of know what's going to happen here.
Well, maybe you're a tad sharper. A person of average intelligence. Sure. Anyway.
That's not what I was saying.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No. I think that's it.
I have a big, big spoiler bomb to drop on you. Okay. HBO's not going to have an episode next week.
I saw that. It said in 2 weeks.
I wondered if you did, because sometimes I know you watch the HBO Go because you've had some problems with the
Yeah, not this time.
Service.
Right before I switched over to like 2 minutes of Mad Men before you got here, I saw, they said in 2 weeks. So
that's some bullshit. People reminded me on Facebook that I think they did this last year too, but I guess we're just not going to have an episode.
We'll
just go on a mini hiatus.
I think HBO airs everything they make on Sunday night. Like, I think maybe the only thing they don't air on Sunday night is Veep.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of bullshit, but then there was a noticeable dip of the audience on Mother's Day weekend. So I guess Memorial Day would really... But I don't know why they care. It's not like people are canceling HBO subscription that weekend.
That's true, yeah. They're not selling ads on it.
And they're not getting ads, and they surely can account for that just in their internal show accounting, so who gives a shit?
I don't know.
I can see if it was like a, you know, like the season finale, and you're not going to, and, you know, it's like, okay, well, we're, I don't know, using audience statistics to predict that or something like that. And they think that, oh, this will be the biggest episode, so we want to kind of push it to a week we know we'll be able to draw the biggest. But it was very weird for me to that they're just going to not have a Game of Thrones next week.
Yeah. So I guess we won't have a podcast next week either.
I think we're just going to have to follow HBO's example and have a mini shutdown. We'll still have unless Mad Men is going to do something crazy like that, but I don't think that's the case.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, I don't think AMC does that kind of shit. But yeah. We'll find out. Anyway, if you'd like to send us feedback for the full cast, it will be out on Tuesday. You can do that at gameofthrones@baldmove.com. We always have our show threads and our podcast threads on facebook.com/baldmove. And Jim, going to holler at him at Twitter. Please no spoilers @baldmove. Unless you have anything else to say, we will see you guys in 2 weeks. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim. See you then.
He has to pay the iron price. He has to pay the iron price. He'll never respect you while he lives in.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey's thirsty, killing pain the hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood in the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar, Daenerys, all men must serve. The answer even flies, and time slips by.